welcome to Citizens Climbing University. I'm your host, Brett Cease, and tonight's webinar is part of a weekly program of Citizens Climate Lobby that provides CCL supporters like you and I with access to in-depth training opportunities on topics related to climate change and effective climate advocacy. Tonight's topic, as you can see, is the power of storytelling, and social scientists and researchers continue to highlight the transformative power that stories still hold, believe it or not, in our society today. One quote that I really love is by the Lisa Crone research team that says, "Opposable thumbs let us hang on, but it's stories that told us what to hang on to." And so in the book, the authors of Reimagining Change remind us that even with evolutionary biology, research is continually showing that our capacity for narrative is actually what's helped to make us humans. We're hardwired for narratives. We know this. Our enjoyment of stories is tied to our social cognition and helps us connect and form groups. And even this is fascinating. The word narrative itself is derived actually from an Indo-European root word know, meaning to know, because to know something is to know the story about it. So that's led some people to think that we should, instead of being called Homo sapiens, which means knowing person, instead be called Homo narrans, which means storytelling people. So anyway, tonight's webinar is going to help us unlock those potentials. And the actual learning goals that hopefully everyone will be walking away from tonight at the end with are threefold. We're really hoping that we're going to be able to review a framework, articulate model examples, and allow you to have those as effective personal examples of storytelling. And then we're really hoping that you also feel empowered by the end to begin framing your own climate stories based on the sequence of what we're going to review tonight, describing change, why it matters, how it's connected to climate change, and what you're doing about it, as well as connecting with your audience. So let me introduce our presenters tonight. We have two wonderful speakers. First up, we'll have Sarah Peach, a journalist and author with Yale Climate Connections. Sarah shares information about climate change and how it's likely to affect people and what they love. Drawing on her reporting from across the U.S., tonight she's going to connect the real-world implications of climate science for Americans, connecting on concerns like food and health. Her reporting has been featured on National Geographic, Scientific American, and the News and Observer, and she currently serves at Yale as editor for Yale Climate Connections, which is a nationally syndicated radio program. So if you are a subscriber, feel free to ask her any questions about it during Q&A. I know it's a great program personally. And then Leslie is going to take over afterwards. At CCL, Leslie Beatty helps to get the word out about CCL and bring CCL's values to life. If you're a fan of our six core values, that was due to Leslie and her team's efforts to really help us find out more about ourselves. Leslie became active in CCL by way of a long career in marketing for for-profit organizations. 8 years spent in the solar industry gave her an appreciation for the complexity of why and how people make environmental purchase decisions. And now she has sent that search into a solution to climate change to meet the scale of the problem and started volunteering in 2016. And now is on staff as a director of marketing. Come, Leslie, welcome, Sarah. So tonight's agenda is going to be pretty straightforward. I'm already done with the introduction. We're going to pass it to Sarah for bringing climate change down to earth. We'll have a chance for Q&A for her section after that. And then we'll jump into Leslie's The Power of Storytelling, some examples of personal CCL stories, and then a more robust Q&A section at the end. So without further ado, welcome, sit back and relax. Thank you for being here, and feel free to use the chat window as we get up and rolling, and we see Sarah's slides here, and we'll pass the baton to you, Sarah.
Great. Well, I'm very excited to be here tonight. Thank you to Brett and to Leslie for having me. I'm really excited to get the chance just to share a little bit about the work that I'm doing with Yale Climate Connections to try to bring climate change down to earth. So as a journalist, I think that I am successful in the work that I'm doing if I can do that, bring climate change down to earth. Take it from this really sort of abstract, sort of complex, technical, sort of distant science issue and bring it down to where the people are, to make it something that people can relate to in their everyday lives, something that makes sense for them to help them understand why this is such a serious problem. So The first thing I want to talk to you tonight about is I want to share a little bit about how at Yale Climate Connections, my radio program, we do this work of bringing climate change down to earth. And then in a little while, I'm going to share a few resources with you so that if you want to help people make that connection between this abstract science and their everyday lives, you can take a look at these resources and start to do that as you talk with your neighbors and your family and your friends and other people in your community. So first, I want to start with a paradox, the climate change paradox. So we know from looking at national surveys that most Americans accept that climate change is real. However, we know also from national surveys that Americans tend to rank climate change very low on the list of priorities for our country to address. So why is that? I think there's a lot of possible answers to that question, but I think it's worth asking. Are we telling the wrong story about climate change? And I'm going to give you an example of something that might be the wrong story. So I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. Just take a moment, stop writing, stop typing, just close your eyes. And when I say a phrase to you, I want you to notice what the first image is that pops into your mind. You ready? Eyes closed? Okay, here's the phrase, global warming. So notice what that first image or your first thought about that phrase is, and you can open your eyes again. So my colleagues at Yale University and at several other universities have actually been asking the same question of Americans for more than 15 years. And the really interesting thing is that when they first started asking people to do this exercise back in 2002, these are the images that came to mind. Polar bears and melting ice. And I think that makes a lot of sense. If you think about 2002, a lot of the media coverage, a lot of what people were seeing on TV, a lot of what they were hearing from nonprofit organizations was about polar bears. It was about melting ice. And it's absolutely true that climate change has huge implications for the Arctic. However, the Arctic is pretty far from where a lot of us here, especially in the lower 48 United States, live. It's distant from us. And it can seem kind of abstract. A lot of us, I know, I have never seen a melting glacier, and a lot of us never will. So maybe this isn't quite the right story. But you can still hear it when you turn on NPR. Here's a recent example, and I really don't mean to pick on NPR here, but here's a recent example that I picked from their website from last month. Migrating Arctic geese are confused, exhausted by rising temperatures. And this is true. This is a problem. And yet, it's distant from what I experience in my everyday life. I don't quite know what an Arctic goose looks like. This still seems far away from me, and maybe it is for you too. There's another way that we often talk about climate change. It's like this. This is also from NPR. Get to know Andrew Wheeler, ex-coal lobbyist with Inside Track to lead EPA. So we all often think of climate change through a political lens too. And don't get me wrong, this is a critically important story to tell, and NPR is doing essential work. Like, it's the essential work of journalists to find out what the government is doing and tell the citizens about that. So I really don't mean to pick on NPR for this. But again, it's for a lot of Americans, this is kind of a distant way of talking about it. It's not necessarily feeling that close to their everyday lives. I have to say, with the exception perhaps of CCL volunteers, because a lot of Americans will never meet their representatives on Capitol Hill, and you all are the exception to that. But I think for a lot of Americans, when they hear about someone named Andrew Wheeler who's going to lead the EPA, that feels like something that's happening in Washington that's far away from them. So at Climate Connections, my radio program, we are quite deliberately trying to tell a different kind of story. So let me tell you a little bit about Climate Connections, just briefly. So this is a radio program that airs every weekday on 400 radio stations across the country. It's also a podcast, so you're welcome to subscribe to that podcast. And it's a 90-second broadcast. It's just a short burst of information. It's a short little story that a lot of our listeners hear when they're driving to work, they're listening to Morning Edition, and that story just magically appears on their radio. And Yale Climate Connections is based, as you might guess, at Yale University, but we have contributors distributed all around the country. For example, I'm in North Carolina. So I want to play you just a short example of the kind of story that we tell at Yale Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. For more than 80 years, Eckhart Orchards in Fredericksburg, Texas, has been known for its juicy, delicious peaches.
My father's mother and father planted peach trees in the 30s.
That's co-owner Diane Eckhart.
I'm very proud to be able to continue on the family business.
But she says, with climate change, growing peaches in Texas is not the same as it was for her parents and grandparents. Warming winters, extreme storms, and drought pose more frequent threats to the health of the trees and the harvest.
Last year, we didn't have enough cold in the winter while the trees were dormant. The fruit buds and the leaf buds did not get enough cold. They didn't leaf out properly. We didn't have any fruit. That was eye-opening to see the trees in so much stress.
To help her family's orchard survive, Eckhart is working to adapt to warmer, drier conditions. She's trying new methods to conserve moisture and experimenting with different peach varieties.
My father always says, when you're growing peaches, you really need to be looking 20, 25, 30 years into the future. If we ignore the climate science, we will not have a farm.
All right. So I'd like to just deconstruct that story here for a minute and invite you to say a little bit about what you heard. So what was different about that story that you just heard about the peach farmer compared to the stories that I showed you from NPR about migrating Arctic geese and Andrew Wheeler? I think one thing that's really important to notice about it is the geography of it. So this story doesn't take place in the Arctic. It's in Texas. And so that, for a lot of people who are living here in the US, that's a lot closer to home. Another thing you can notice about it is the person who's speaking. This isn't a scientist. It's not someone from an NGO. This is a farmer. And that's not necessarily the voice that we always expect to hear talking about climate change. And then there's the content. This isn't about birds or about ice or polar bears. This describes an impact on people that's easier to relate to, we hope, because everyone has seen peaches in the grocery store. And then I think one other thing to notice about it is that this is something that's happening right now. This isn't something that we're talking about our grandchildren or maybe a story about something that might happen one day in 2100. This is happening now. And what we suspect from the data that my colleagues at Yale have gathered is that when you take climate change and you put it in people's backyards in the present day like this, it is a much more resonant issue, much more salient for them. I will say, Climate Connections, I'm very glad to say, does not have a monopoly on this kind of storytelling. A lot of other news organizations are starting to do this too. News organizations like NPR and Inside Climate News and the New York Times and others. And I think what's fascinating about that is we're actually starting to see a shift in how Americans think about climate change. So I asked you that question, what do you think of? And I told you that a lot of Americans used to think about climate change as an issue for polar bears and ice. Well, my colleagues asked this question again recently, and they found something different. What they found is that people are now saying they associate climate change with wildfires and floods. So you can see that the story is changing and it is coming a little bit closer to home. So the message is getting out there. And at Climate Connections, we are continuing to try to bring it closer and closer and closer. So we don't just run stories about wildfires. We want to tell the story of maybe your child has asthma, and when there's a wildfire, he has to go to the emergency room and get treated there. So it's even closer to people's personal and even kind of intimate lives. So I've been working at Climate Connections for 2 years now as an editor, and I think that I have cracked the formula of how to tell a good Climate Connections story. And I'm gonna share that formula with you tonight, and you are free to steal it. So this is the Yale Climate Connections formula for a story about climate change that resonates with the American public. Number one, something in our community is changing. Number two, it's related to climate change. So plausibly, when you look at the science, this maybe is a climate impact, and you can say that and be responsible in saying that. And number three, this is the most important one, it matters. This isn't just a story about, I don't know, one little beetle crawling through one desert that's affected by climate change. It really matters to a lot of people. And I think the trick of it oftentimes to telling a story that matters is that people are affected. So I use this formula not just in my work at Climate Connections, but when I am speaking in my community about climate change. So for example, I live here in North Carolina, and when I was speaking at my public library in Durham a few months ago, I showed them this picture. This is me and my dad in the 80s. And I said, look, I'm a Southerner. I've lived in the South all my life. And so I know that the climate has changed here in the South. It's not the same place that it was when I was a little girl. And in fact, one of the things that's changed is that mosquito season has gotten longer. In fact, it's 41 days longer here in Durham than it used to be in the 1980s when I was born. So that's 41 extra days of slapping at mosquitoes, 41 extra days on average every year of thinking, I hope I don't get West Nile virus. And that is a change that has happened just in my lifetime. And I'm not that old. And then at the library, I showed them this picture of my dad on Polly's Island in South Carolina last summer. This was just about a year ago. And when we were there, it hadn't rained all day, certainly hadn't been anything like a hurricane. And yet at high tide, the streets flooded. And that kind of sight is becoming more common in cities all along the East Coast. In fact, in Charleston, there have been hundreds of additional floods that just simply didn't used to happen in previous decades. This is sea level rise happening right before our eyes, and it's a sign of what could change if we don't take action to address climate change. So you might have noticed I just used the formula twice. I used it in the story about mosquitoes and the story about flooding. With both of these stories, something in my community has changed. I have seen it myself, and it's really personal to me because the place where I grew up isn't quite the same anymore. And both of those changes are very likely related to climate change. And it also, most importantly, it really matters. People hate mosquitoes. You know, they don't want to get bitten, and it's really annoying that mosquito season has gotten a lot longer in Durham. And of course, sea level rise if it goes unchecked, will affect millions and millions of Americans. So that's kind of a brief summary of how I like to talk about climate change when I'm speaking with members of the public in this country. And I want to give you a couple of resources to start using this formula and do the same thing. So let me just show you a few things, and then I can take questions. So first, I'm going to show you this section of the Yale Climate Connections website. So if you go onto our website, what you will see is a map of stories that we've told. So Climate Connections has been around for 4 years now. So we have told hundreds and hundreds of stories. And it's entirely possible that we have told a story about your community or somewhere near your community. So if you go onto this map, what you can do is take a look, and let's say you live in Oklahoma. You can click and see a story about a place near you and click on it, and it'll take you directly to that story. And we license our stories free of charge to anybody who wants to use them, so you are welcome to just take them. So another story, another resource that I highly recommend is Climate Central's interactive gallery. If you haven't played around with Climate Central's website, it's a really wonderful resource. This is where I found out about the change in length of mosquito season in Durham. And most of their resources in this section of the website allow you to type in your own town or your own city and find out about changes that have happened near you. So you can speak very authoritatively about the changes that have happened. If you really want to hear it directly from the horse's mouth or scientists, I strongly recommend the National Climate Assessment that came out in 2014. This was written by scientists, so it's very authoritative, but it's also really accessible. So I don't have a PhD in atmospheric sciences, but I look at this website all of the time because it has a lot of really wonderful information that is quite easy to understand. So you can go on here and explore your own region. So here's like the Southeast, and it shows you the key climate threats to your region. So that's another way of zeroing in on your own community and being able to tell stories that will make sense and will be resonant for the people around you. So I just want to show you one last thing. I'd love for you to keep in touch. If you want to sign up for my newsletter, it's here at peachreport.com/newsletter. If you sign up, I won't spam you or give your email to anyone else. I'll just send you occasional updates when I have a new big project about climate change. So thanks so much for listening. I can take a few questions.
Thank you so much, Sarah. This is absolutely the kind of information that our advocates throughout the country are really ripe to soak up. And I think I speak for all of us with how much we've benefited from listening. Let's at least take two questions. We have time for at least two questions on the phone. It's *6, or you can click on your microphone icon if you're using the computer.
I see that you are using the techniques and the stories in your podcasts and this organization you're with. How do you suggest that that fits for the rest of us? Where would we use these stories? I wouldn't use this when I'm talking to a representative or something particularly.
You know, it's up to you. The way that I tend to use it is people come to me and ask questions all the time about climate change. And they'll say things like, well, is it really real? Is it going to be that bad? And I have a couple of these examples that I can just pull out of my pocket anytime someone asks me. Like I can say, well, you know, I was on family vacation last summer with my dad, and we saw water where there never was water before in South Carolina. The streets were flooding. And it really is that bad. It's already begun. Yeah, I think this might be best used for when you're talking with family and friends and people who trust you.
And I would even add, Terry, that you should absolutely feel comfortable using this formula Sarah showed us for your meetings with Congress. One of the most powerful stories I've ever heard of with the CCL meetings was when Joy Lawns came to DC after losing her home in the Santa Rosa fire, the wildfires in California last year. And she was able to tell Kamala Harris in the hallway. She told that in every single meeting that she was at. And it's a very powerful formula to bringing climate change to why you're going to the Hill. So feel free to copy this and use it wherever your meetings are.
Sarah, I love your podcast. I've been following it for a couple of weeks now, and it's wonderful. It's perfect. Most recently, for here in Los Angeles, you covered the buckling of asphalt in extended heat, and that was like, that hits me here on, because we have a lot of streets here in Los Angeles. I want at the end of my story to say, and it's just going to get worse until we do something. But I've noticed you didn't go to gloom and doom.
Yeah, that's true. And that's quite deliberate, actually. That's a really, I'm so glad you noticed that, because one of the things that I didn't say about what we're trying to do with the podcast and the radio program is we are very deliberately telling stories for a segment of Americans that we know from survey data feels really hopeless. So we know there is actually a sizable portion of the American public that thinks climate change is real, that thinks it's a serious problem, and also believes that it's totally overwhelming, it's too late, there's nothing we can do, we should just go drink margaritas at the beach. And so we tell a certain fraction of our stories, we're aiming it at that audience, to show them in every community there are leaders, there are role models who are taking action, that they're still working to address the problem, and people around them, people like them, aren't giving up. And we think that's a really important story to tell for that segment of the public as well. You know, journalists and advocates have different roles to play in our society. And what we are doing as journalists is offering information. And you folks, like advocates and anyone else, can take that information. You can decide what to do with it. But my role basically is to be a witness.
And Elizabeth, it's almost as if you fed into the perfect segue for the second half here, because we're going to tackle exactly kind of that cliffhanger. If we transition to really thinking about how we can use the information Sarah's armed us with and then apply it with our CCL hats on as well. So if it's all right, I'll actually pass the baton to Leslie. And again, just want to give you a huge round of applause, Sarah, for all that you've done to really open up all of our formulas to being more effective storytellers. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Hi to everyone. I'm not sure if I've had the opportunity to meet everyone here on the phone, but I'm Leslie Beatty, and I'm CCL's Director of Marketing. I joined earlier this year. So thank you for having me here tonight. I was very excited when Brett asked me to contribute to the second half of this call. You know, I have a specific angle as a marketer and as, you know, thinking about storytelling from within CCL. And so I wanted to share with you my angle up front on storytelling and how I'm thinking about it. I'm really approaching it from the role of what role do stories and storytelling have to play in the work that we're doing here at CCL? And there are a couple things that float to the top. The first is that the stories that we already tell each other over and over highlight some basic truths about who we are, and they bring our values to life, and they really deserve sort of a valued place in our brand. And that's true for any organization that's thinking about, you know, who they are and how they want to be in the world. But I think what's more unique to CCL is that I think that we come to life more frequently and more vibrantly through all of us, like the our volunteers in person, and that this sort of vibrancy particularly invites storytelling as a way to highlight it, so that stories bring to life sort of our own personalities and our own lenses on things in a way that really fits well with the work that we do and how we do it. Okay, so why storytelling? Brett kicked this off a little bit, but it's a fundamentally human activity, right? And in fact, it's just like the reason we tell stories is that we just really like to sit around telling stories and listening to each other tell stories. So it's something that's enjoyable for us to do. And I think that's like a key to a good story is that it's enjoyable to tell and it's enjoyable to listen. And then as Brett said, it's a really effective way for us. It's the only way through time really that we've communicated to each other what our shared values and our shared past is. And it's participatory. So, you know, the audience is part of the story when you're telling a story, and storytelling sort of invites reciprocity. So, you know, if someone tells a good story, that the inclination of the listeners is to tell their own good story back. And this is the way that humans want to share and receive information. And so it has a critical role to play for us as we think about communicating, not only about climate change, but about the work that we do at CCL and why it's important and really where so many of our challenges are in communication and figuring out sort of the exact right thing to say to get people to, whether it's change their minds or decide to take action or get really engaged, storytelling has a role to play. This one is, I sort of hear it said that people feel that we have experienced like a decline recently, that we used to use facts to make decisions, but now we don't. Now people are just being influenced by what other people are saying. And I would submit to you, in fact, that has always been the case. Like we have never used facts to make decisions in the history of the human race. Like we have our dominant way that we think is intuitive. And our intuitive minds really bias the analysis that we're able to do and how easy it is for us to process things, such that the opinions that we're really sure about aren't actually more correct. It's just that those opinions feel more correct to us because they fit more easily into the narrative that our intuitive mind has already decided is the answer. And so we're more convinced by arguments that already fit our existing narrative than we are by arguments that have sort of an unbiased clarity. And that's just something that has always, always been the case. And I think it's really, it's very funny because we can see that other people are thinking irrationally, but we can't see that we are also thinking irrationally. And so it's this weird, like blind condition that we all suffer from. And I don't say this, I'm not addressing this topic to suggest that science shouldn't be used to understand climate change, because obviously there is science and it's valid, but it does help us understand why using science to tell other people who don't believe in climate change that they should believe in climate change has failed so spectacularly. And that's because when we try and push facts in to a narrative where they don't fit, they get rejected. And that, again, that's true for all of us. It seems to me that we're living in a state not where rational thinking has failed, but where storytelling has failed in the sense that we've used it in the past, which is that, you know, one-to-one, one-to-many stories exist in communities. And, you know, they're known and it's a very strong fabric of shared understanding, both of our past and sort of our common situations. You know, I feel like as we become more isolated, that fabric has worn thin, and that's partly why, or largely why, we see narratives dominated by things like Fox News and CNN today. And so I would submit to you that telling stories and the act of storytelling and, you know, talking to one another and sharing information this way is actually critical to solving the problem of climate change. Okay, so I thought we could dive into this with one of the CCL stories that we always share. And there are a bunch, but I wanted to share two of the big ones. They're not about climate change, but they say a lot about who we are. The other thing that's fun about them is, like, you know, stories are sort of, the basic framework is the same. These get told by different people to different people, and they change a little bit all the time, but they convey something that's basically true and worth sharing about ourselves and us. And so I will share the story of Mahatma Gandhi that was shared to me as told by Marshall Saunders last year, which is to say it was his specific telling of it. So this is a story about Mahatma Gandhi during the period of time where he's an attorney in South Africa before he returned to India. The South African government had passed the Black Laws, which discriminated against Indians, and there were demonstrations going on. Gandhi worked his way into the presence of the president of the country, General Jan Smuts. He was a British general and tall. Gandhi was 4'11 and 100 pounds. And of course, the general and president of the country was in uniform, and Gandhi sat across from him. The general says, "So why are you here, Mr. Gandhi?" And Mr. Gandhi says, "I've come to tell you that I'm going to fight your government." Taken aback, the general says, "Is there anything else you want to tell me?" "Yes, we're going to win." Still more taken aback, the general says, "Now tell me how you're going to win." And Gandhi says, "With your help." That's a story that we tell over and over at CCL, right? Because it absolutely captures the core of our approach to how we approach other people who may not agree with us, not as adversaries, but as people whose confidence and cooperation we need to gain. That's one story. And then the next story is the story of G. Butera, right? And this is sort of a legendary story at CCL, but you know, this was told by Joe Robertson at the national conference a couple years ago. So one day I was sitting with G. Butera in the Rayburn cafeteria. He had just returned from a meeting with a congressional office and he had final confirmation there was going to be a bipartisan climate solutions caucus in the House of Representatives. We were incredibly excited. We were looking at the papers Jay had and we were getting ready to go celebrate and toast to this. And Jay looks at his phone. He has an email from the congressional office, which had just confirmed, and a very senior member of his staff had pushed back. And so it fell apart. I remember thinking not just that this great moment had disappeared, but that this was now going to be even harder. But Jay did not collapse in despair. He said, "I've got to find out what's going on." He went back upstairs to listen. He had a spring in his step because there was something exciting and good about what he was doing, and he was going to keep doing it. That was 2 years ago. Jay has continued to work diligently. Little by little, he built bridges so that people can connect. And in the end, because of hard work and good faith he built, that's what they did. And so now we have the Bipartisan Climate Solutions Caucus. So that's the story of Jay Butera. And I wanted to dive into a little bit, like, we know those are two good stories because we keep telling them, but what makes a good story? And that's a little fuzzy. I thought a lot about this. I think the ideal outcome of a story is that your story reveals a truth to your audience that they hadn't realized before. But really, I think fundamentally a good story is something that's interesting and true to you and something that you enjoy and are comfortable telling. The best stories reveal a basic truth, but that truth can be really small. It might just reveal a link between you and your audience that your audience might not have realized existed. And to that end, I would suggest that not every CCL story or not every story that we tell on behalf of our work at CCL needs to be explicitly about climate change, because there are ways to establish that connection and there are ways to unveil truths and move the conversation forward that are still relevant to the work that we do. Like there's a lot of work that CCL does that deals with, you know, being in a democracy and how we participate in that. And those stories are just as relevant as the climate change stories in some cases. And then the other thing about a story is unique in that it's not just a speech about why you care about something or what you think, right? It's got some plot points. So it has a sequence of actions, right? So like first this happens, then this other thing happens, and then this last thing happens. And then you can provide your summary thoughts on what you think it means. And if there's an element of the surprise, that makes it a great story. Great stories are really hard to tell, come up with and tell. And I think anyone who does stories regularly, and I'm sure Sarah has thoughts on this, but practices quite a lot. So, you know, that's the other thing is, like, you know, a story is a good story as you sort of practice it and figure out what your audience relates to and, you know, what they don't and what timing works and things like that. The other thing that I thought about, this directly relates to sort of the discussion at the end of Sarah's call, is that stories leave your audience in different emotional states. And in fact, work has been done, which started by Kurt Vonnegut, to map the emotional arc of stories, which is not exactly the same as mapping the plot, but it's probably pretty similar. And it turns out that there are a couple common story patterns that sort of stories tend to follow. And the first story, so what Kurt Vonnegut did is he said you could map every story on the y-axis for good fortune at the top and bad fortune at the bottom and the beginning. And so what this story is the rags to riches story, right? It could be any story that follows this pattern, but you've got a character, they're very unfortunate, there's nothing good is happening to them, and through hard work and sort of luck and time, eventually their true character and value is rewarded and they have great fortune and they're super happy. There's a lot of stories that follow that model, but not every story. There's also what Kurt Vonnegut calls the man in the whole story, which is where someone gets into trouble and gets out of it, right? Someone's doing fine, they get into trouble, they get out. And then there is the Icarus model, which is Icarus, of course, starts out sort of somewhere in the middle. He gets his wings, he can fly, he flies too close to the sun and he plummets to Earth. I would suggest that we need to beware of the Icarus model in our climate change stories, because a lot of stories do tend to follow this trajectory when we talk about climate change, which is that we have emotionally dropped people off a cliff and then we leave them lying there. But I'm not sure that we fully understand how much work is required to pull somebody back out. But I don't know that leaving people at the bottom of the cliff for our work at CCL is where we want to leave them. I don't know exactly what to say about this other than that sometimes we may want to go around the hole or build a bridge over the hole or, you know, really do the work to figure out, like, can we pull people out of the hole that we're leaving them in? Because I do think that this is a real issue, that I do think that a lot of people realize that climate change is happening. And the reason they can't deal with it is it's terrifying. And so I think we need to be very responsible in our work with CCL about how we deal with this sort of very human emotions around what's happening with climate change. So I wanted to call out the Icarus model. Let's keep going. There's one last model, which is very funny. So this is the Cinderella model, where here's Cinderella. She's, you know, sort of, she's very sad, but she's not so sad because she's sort of a, you know, a likable person. And then she meets the fairy godmother and she gets a pair of shoes and she gets a dress and she gets a ride to the thing and she meets the prince and she goes way up, super happy at the top. And then the clock strikes midnight and she goes way back down. But then, you know, the prince comes looking for her and she gets the shoe. And really, this is sort of the arc that the Jay Butera story follows to some degree, right? Jay Butera built up what he thought was the, you know, a climate solutions caucus. He talked to people. He followed up these stair steps. He thought he had it. And then he got the email from the congressional representative that sent him back down. But, you know, he kept going. And so there's an emotional arc to those stories that really provide the impetus for other people feeling like the momentum, I guess, to sort of to get other people to feel like they can do something. I thought those arcs were interesting for us to consider. And then stories about ourselves. So, you know, we all sort of have the need for a story about, you know, who we are and, you know, why we're involved in the work that we're doing with CCL or why we care about the climate or any of this stuff. And what I would say here is that I have a couple recommendations. And the first is that, like, above all, be personal. Like, I feel like what gives any of us our power are the sort of unique experiences and qualifications that we have. And being able to tell a story that shares that is inherently more interesting to someone else than a story that tries to jump into how somebody else might feel. The second is that sharing our imperfections. So we talked about, you know, the story as a way to build a connection. Like a great outcome for a story is that you have a connection to someone that you didn't have before. And the way that we build connections is actually by sharing vulnerability, not by demonstrating topic mastery. There is nothing as likable to an audience as someone who can laugh at themselves and invite the audience to have a laugh at their expense too. And so, you know, we deal and, you know, as it relates to climate change, like humans deal with trauma. We heal by, we either cry or we laugh. And that's kind of what moves us through different, you know, difficult emotional periods. And I feel like, you know, climate change really brings out the crying, at least for me. I go straight towards the, you know, the bucket of tears stories, but that there is also actually humor as an unexplored angle. And I think that it is like a valid way to, you know, get people to sort of deal with it and move forward through it. And that we shouldn't exclude the idea that, you know, you could have a really funny story if one comes to you. And then the last is don't be afraid to stay small. And I think we all have a tendency to try and extrapolate beyond ourselves, to try and draw lines between, you know, our own personal experience and what that means for, you know, some larger number of people. But I think people are actually very capable of relating to something very small. Like that's actually very small things are what hook people in. And that when we try and really like expand out and make our story more relevant, sometimes it can backfire in that we don't have a credibility, you know, as a personal storyteller to sort of draw those conclusions or make those assumptions. So I guess, you know, put together, I would say a story can just be something about you that you think, and it doesn't need to be something that that's like researched or, you know, where you're tying everything together. All right. So CCL is full of storytellers. I mean, there are some fantastic storytellers. And so when Brett and I went looking for some examples, we didn't have enough time to pull from sort of, you know, all places that we have CCLers telling stories. So what we did was we looked at the most recent June conference.
Using Leslie's storytelling arc and that map of the emotional journey that we take as we tell stories, feel free to key in as you listen to Alan's story and then the next story on really that up and down cycle and how both of these featured speakers use it effectively within their own personal story.
Hi, everyone. I'm Alan Hubbard from Lincolnton, North Carolina, and I'm really proud to be at this bunch like this, and it's actually given me a purpose because 1965, I got out of school and went to work in the oil industry. For 20 years, I was in oil exploration and production in South Louisiana, most of the time in Lafayette, Louisiana. There was a young lady here from there. We thought we were patriots. I mean, we were patting ourselves on the back, thinking, oh, how to solve the energy crunch and, so... Anyway, after about 20 years, the oil industry collapsed in Louisiana, domestic oil industry. I wound up found myself in Charlotte, North Carolina, doing environmental consulting. Leaking underground storage tanks. And that's when that boom hit and everybody discovered it was leaking underground storage tanks, polluted groundwater. And I realized, hey, I was part of the problem for 20 years, and now I'm trying to be part of the solution. But I really, until CCL came along, I didn't really feel like I had a purpose. Now, this is something I really sink my teeth into. I've been at this for about a year. This is my first time in D.C. I really loved it. And And it's given me a real purpose. And my grandchildren know that Pops is trying to do something for their future.
I love that last line. I think it says so much about, you know, a very human emotion, right? He just sort of realized that he was not part of the solution. He was actually part of the problem. And he's found a way for himself to, you know, restore his personal narrative and his, you know, he's got this value of being able to look his grandkids in the eye, which I think everybody shares.
All right. So thank you to Alan Hubbard. And here is Nick Dembski's story, and we'll let him take it from here.
Hi, everyone. My name is Nick Dembski. I'm from Racine, Wisconsin. That's what's up. There's a million of us here. So this is my fourth year lobbying with Citizens Climate Lobby. And Citizens Climate Lobby has legitimately changed my life. And sure, yeah. How many of us can say that, right? But I really quickly just want to give one sort of abstract way and one concrete way in which that's true. So the first time I came here, I felt like so many things at the conference, so many things changed for me at the conference. I learned so many things that really had nothing to do with climate, but really had more to do with life and the interconnected web of life that we're all a part of. And I would just say one of those things that Citizens Climate Lobby taught me, it seemed like we kind of came here and we're all asking the question, like, what do you do with an enemy? How do you defeat an enemy? And Citizens Climate Lobby comes with the answer, you befriend them. And the way we turn that dynamic around here in this family has changed how I live my life. So I want to thank you all for that. But the second way, the more concrete way, I'll just echo the sentiments that so many people have said, it takes you beyond the walls, beyond the drapes, and demystifies the process. And you realize, oh, these people that I see in news articles and on TV, they're human beings, you know, they do everything like I do. Oh, I'm a human being too. So long story short, in the beginning of 2018, I ran for an elected office. I just gave it a try. Why not? It was an amazing experience. I was running against a 20-year incumbent for a county board seat in a district in Racine County, and I would just like to very, very much thank you, because this group of people got me to that place where I would even do that. I would also like to say I won that seat against that 20-year incumbent. So that's what's up. Thank you. I love you, Marshall. Thank you for being family.
All right. Well, what a powerful hook at the end, the surprise button that ties it all together. Again, a wonderful story of progressions, of unexpected endings, and a lead up that made you think that one ending was going to happen and then another. So let's wrap this up. First off, again, we'd love to just thank both Leslie and Sarah for your wonderful advice and your input tonight on really helping all of our network frame effective storytelling on behalf of climate advocacy. So a quick review of the Yale Climate Communications Formula. Number one, describe something in your life or community that's changing, and then relate it or connect it back to climate change, explaining why and how it matters. And then we'll close by adding this fourth element. As CC advocates, it's really strategic not just to leave your audience on that cliff of emotion, but to really close by sharing your own personal action, your own story, the solutions that you're finding hope in, and really connecting the dots on why you are involved in an organization like CCL or whatever else you're doing in life, to really provide that inspiration for your audience as well. I think another couple of wonderful suggestions here on the slide that are highlighted are really keying into the emotional setting again that Leslie's emphasized, being compelling and helping your audience become curious with you. And if you're looking for a wonderful resource on that, Peterson Toscano, the host of Citizens Climate Radio, runs an excellent Telling Better Climate Stories workshop at CCL's conference every year. And that link is going to be provided in the resources with this webinar. He asks his audience to start writing their own stories based on two prompts, asking when I think about climate change, it reminds me of, and one thing that makes me concerned about climate change is, and these really help tie the knot with that curiosity back to the Yale climate formula. And then, like Leslie also reminded, make sure to be authentic. Be yourself, be personal. That's what gives us power in our storytelling. And it can't be said enough, practice sharing your story with others, whether it's within your own group, your own family. Get feedback, just like Toastmasters, try it again, and really incorporate what people are telling you to make that improved story ready for prime time whenever the opportunity presents itself. And just a highlight, if anyone does have questions or wants feedback, here's where the URL can be found, as well as questions sent to my email about tonight, or suggestions, feedback, you name it. We really look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts and input, as well as how you use this within your own advocacy, wherever you might be tuning in from. We're going to have a forum discussion where people can share their own stories as well. So be looking for that in the action sheet. So at this point, what I'd like to just do is close with a quote. And again, thank our speakers tonight for their wonderful advice. And this comes from the authors, again, of Reimagining Change, Patrick Rinesborough and Doyle Canning. And oh, there's a wonderful book that they, the book that they've written is wonderful. And this is the quote that they ended with. We have the opportunity today to lead a path toward a better future for all. We could transform fear and denial into hope and action, but only if we step into our collective power as story makers and story changers. The transformational stories of the 21st century will not be handed down, but will rather bubble up as collaborative strategies for communities and grassroots movements like our own on the forefront of transition. The new stories will emerge from struggle and celebration and amplify the heroes at the margins, inspiring us to meet the true scale of our problems. Most importantly, they will reveal the creative sparks to do the seemingly impossible, reimagine change, and remake our world. And so with that tonight, we just wanted to thank you for being on the line. Thank you so much for all of your work. And thank you, as both Sarah and Leslie have said, in helping personalize and humanize the stories of climate impacts that are already happening throughout this country and bringing more people into action with us.
Thank you so much. Very interesting. Good information.
Yes, thank you.
Can't wait to practice it.
Lots of fun. Good night.